I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are you serious?
This is How to Kill an Hour. There's plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for killing some time with us. Before we crack on with today's show, if you'd like to join our newsletter, please head to howtokillanhour.com/news. That's howtokillanhour.com/news. We'll let you know about all the new ways that we're killing time and our special giveaways. And we've got a big one coming up, actually. So hop on to howtokillanhour.com/news and you'll be able to win something for free. Yeah, pretty good. On today's show, we are joined by a legend in the podcasting game. Yeah, he's also a rapper, an actor, a label boss, a DJ. Any way that you can really be entertained, I feel like you tick those boxes. Welcome to the show, Scroobius Pip.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
First things first, I know you're not doing a lot of spots on podcasts at the moment, yeah, so man. I really appreciate you taking the time to come down.
It's
to see
all
us.
Good. It's not a problem. I was definitely lured in by, oh, we're just going to play some games and talk. That's good. That doesn't feel like it's work or promo or whatever, you know?
No, I mean...
It's a good setup.
It's what we do. I mean, we like to kill time and we always actually kick off the show asking our guests how they've been killing some time recently.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool that you actually came in and killed a bit of time with us before the episode. So,
yeah, completely. We came and played some games.
So. Yeah, definitely. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. But first things first, how are you doing? How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It seems to be the last few years, anytime anyone asks, I'm like, I'm really hectic. But I can never think of what I've been doing. I just know I haven't had a day off in months. But yeah, I'm all good. And podcasts are my savior on them journeys, on drives, everything else. On the killing time front, it's been my go-to. I feel I've dropped so far behind on new music and all stuff like that because it's like, well, I've got hours and hours of podcasts I need to get through.
There's just so much out there. Not just stuff. There's actually so much good content out there when it comes 100%. To the podcasting game. How do you feel about it? Because you've been, I think you podcasted a couple of years now?
4 years.
4 years
coming
in.
Up. All right. Four or five. It's been a while.
So how do you feel like the landscape has changed in the podcasting area since you started yours?
I love it. I love that it's... The thing I really liked, when I started my podcast, I just had a show on XFM, as it was at the time, and we'd won some like awards and stuff like that, and then... I was on Joe Rogan's podcast in America, and he was, I can't remember if it was on air or off air, he was saying, why'd you do it for someone else? And I was like, well, it's commercial radio and all this. He's like, yeah, but you could just do it yourself. So he kind of prompted me to start a podcast. And what I liked about that is that's what all podcasters seem to be like. They seem to be encouraging everyone else to do one, shouting out other podcasts, whereas on radio it felt... That on X, I couldn't mention Radio 1, and Radio 1 would never mention Capital, and so on and so forth. It's like as if they don't exist. It's some secret. Whereas in the podcast world, people seem excited to share new stuff they've found or stuff they're enjoying.
It's really weird. Like in the commercial radio world as well, it's really interesting that I was on Capital Extra for a little while, so I was next door neighbours with you, actually.
In the same building,
studio next door, actually, so you could like give you a way through. I think I mentioned Capital Radio having something on once and I got told by a producer like, no, we don't mention other brands.
Yeah.
And I was like, but you're part of the same group. They're like, it's, the same it's not group. Policy.
It's mad, isn't
it's
it?
It's really interesting. It's like, so to go from that to a space where, you know, I can say to you like, check out the Marvel Wolverine podcast that's with Stitcher, which is actually sick. Yeah. I recommend you check that out.
I need to give them a look. All right.
Is great, do you know what I mean? And I love the sharing capacity that's in podcasting as well, and I think that's really helping to grow the whole scene.
100%, and I think the important thing for podcasters is to not fall into that that commercial radio world where you're obsessing over your numbers every week and all this, because it's easy to do, but because in most platforms you can keep an eye on if you've gone up or down. And I've got my kind of podcast network now, so I bring in a lot of new podcasts and stuff like that. And the thing I always say to them is, just gauge your podcast off if you think it was good that week, not off the numbers, because you're gonna. If you're doing it right, it's a never-ending story anyway. If numbers are down one week, they're going to be up another week. It fluctuates and varies. So, yeah, I think you can obsess too much over that, and that's how you get into those worlds where, well, we never mention anyone else because we don't want to lose any of our listeners over to Kappa or to X or whatever else. And yeah, it's no good.
Yeah, it's a nice environment, this podcast environment. I think there's still room in the live broadcasting area of radio for great content to come, and I think you've still got loads of awesome content, but
yeah,
it's just so easy to engage with a podcast. So I could pick up your latest drop, or I could go back a few months and find out, I know what's an earlier podcast, like the one where you watched the Dwayne, the Rock Johnson film with your mum, and you had a chat with her about it.
Yeah, exactly.
I can go back and find that evergreen content and listen to it, and thing I like about podcasts is if my phone rings, well, because I've got an iPhone, the podcast stops playing and I can have a chat. But completely. I don't miss anything.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I know I can listen back to all radio now, but
Who does?
Do you know what I mean? So I think maybe that broadcasting format is going to have to follow the podcasting format. And it is actually, there's more content that we're seeing on the radio where they're actually pushing it over and making podcasts out of them.
To get a weirdly business on it all, and you mentioned I do a lot of things, and I think part of the reason that is a good work ethic, but when I started my podcast 4 years ago, not many advertisers sponsored on podcasts in the UK. There was a fair few in America, and working with Acast, who hosts my podcast, I hit up a load of different places and said, look, just give us a try, because whilst radio may have more listeners, exactly as you were saying, they're not necessarily paying attention. If you're advertising on my podcast, people are going to be, they're only choosing to listen to that when they've got time to pay attention to it. So my argument to advertisers was 10,000 listeners paying attention is worth more than 50,000 or 100,000 who are at work or doing other things and not paying attention at all, or going to the toilet or whatever. And yeah, it ended up working. I've had sponsors every week and for a few years now, so it's an interesting one, because it's that focus, and that's important for guests and everything as well. It's why I've ended up being able to get Michael Fassbender on and James McAvoy and these huge names, because previously they would only be doing their 5 minute slot on the ITV news or whatever it is, and my point to them was a 45 minute slot of people paying attention is going to sell your film a lot more without it having to be an advert for your film. It's an engaging conversation. So
yeah, and you also get to get a bit extra. You get other areas of their life stories, like
100%.
It's you know, it makes for really good listens. I mean, you had a recent episode. I forgot the gentleman's name, it's literally clear flung from my head. He's in Star Wars.
Dominic Monaghan in the new one. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, Dominic Monaghan. A recent episode, and he managed to tell you as much as he could about the whole process of getting into Star Wars, and I feel like there's never time for that.
Well, that was a dope one, because I went in fully expecting that we'll be able to talk for like a minute about Star Wars, and then obviously he's got Lord of the Rings to talk about, all these other things, because normally, because Simon Pegg is an example, he's been on twice now and he's a mate, and every time, or both times he's been on, as soon as we've stopped recording, he's gone like, here's the stuff I couldn't talk about. And it's that kind of a world when it's them big films. So I was amazed that Dominic was, I kind of set him up to, I'm sure we can't talk about much. He's like, we could talk about a bit.
Yeah.
And he went into it. I ended up moving it. That was originally scheduled to come out in about a month. And I moved it forward because I was like, he's actually talking about Star Wars and no one ever does that. All actors just go, I can't really say anything. And he went into it. He went into his excitement of it all and made it a personal story rather than his spoilers or whatever else. You know?
Yeah, I will definitely link to that in the show description because I don't think I've ever heard about that side of Star Wars before.
It was mad. So it's
very, very interesting. Yeah. Very, very interesting. But what is it like, do you think, makes you such a self-starter then? Because I feel like every project that you've done has been, I'm going to go out and do this.
Yeah.
And that's where the beginning of the process starts. You don't think, I'm going to do this and I'll see how it goes and I'll hit up somebody here and hit up somebody there.
Yeah. It's a weird one. I was discussing, again, it feels like I'm plugging all my podcast episodes now. But I've got an episode coming out soon with a lady called Desiree Akhavan, and she's a writer and director. She's got a new series that starts on October 10th. I'm not sure when this is going out, on Channel 4, called The Bisexual, and it's one of the most easily engaging and funny shows I've seen. And when I was talking to her, she was talking about how she lived about 40 minutes outside of New York her whole life. And it struck me as similar to me. I've lived about 40 minutes out of London my whole life. And it's like, I'm near to all of that, but I am in this isolated town where, and I kind of discussed with her how much is boredom a motivator. And I think that is a huge thing. I've stayed in Stanford Lee Hope my whole life because I'm really productive there. I've not got tons of club nights and all these other things to tempt me to. If I want any of them, I have to go all the way into London. So it's easier to resist any of that. And I have to get the last train home, which is like 5 past midnight or something out my way. So I think that kind of, it is a motivator, living in a small town and having that boredom kind of makes you go, all right, I'll start creating, I'll start doing things, I'll make stuff happen.
Yeah, and you definitely have. I mean, I was actually trying to get to your gig last weekend, but I couldn't get back to London. And that's We Are Lizards, isn't it? And that's a regular gig, so you've actually got another one coming up, haven't you?
We do it every other month, and that's a club night that I've been doing for 7 years now, and we've had it, we've reached capacity every time for 7 years, which for a club night is crazy rare, but again, it was one of those things. It was like, let's just try it. I think I lucked out that the first thing that I did kind of musically, or in my first ever year of making a music, I got together with Dan Lesak and we made a song called Thou Shalt Always Kill, and it went straight into the charts. And that's good, but it's been hugely beneficial with everything else I've done, because it's made me realise, oh, you can kind of do anything then.
Yeah.
You can kind of just do anything. Because that was literally the first song that I wrote together. And people talk about how hard the music industry is, and it is, but I just happen to have the experience of, no, you just write a song, you release it, and you're in the charts, and you tour the world. And then it kind of, it's as simple as that. And it's been a similar thing on all of them. I started the podcast, and within a year, I had 10 times as many listeners as I had on my XFM show. And it was one of them. I was like, all right, well, you just start it, and you do it. And I think we spend a lot of time telling ourselves the reason things can't work or the reason things won't work, rather than just doing them and seeing if they work. And there's no harm in failing. I've done a load of things. I used to have a film club at the Prince Charles Cinema, and a load of them were really busy, but I had some that we had like 10, 12 people turn out to. So, but it was still fun. It was still worth doing. If you're not scared of failing, then it's, you try all these things, and a lot of them will happen if you get out there and do it.
Yeah, it's quite a common thing that we find, and we talk about, and producer Bill and I talk about sometimes, just putting stuff out or putting a few things out, seeing which works, and then doing more of the stuff that works, and then do a few, I don't know, say for example, 5 types of videos. One of the content in one of them is gaming, for example, and the gaming video does really well. So let's do 3 or 4 more gaming videos.
Yeah.
Out of those games, which are the ones that our audience engages with more, so let's do more of those videos. And I think it's that kind of process that people go through when they just go out and start.
Yeah.
That really helps them to kind of find out what works for them and find out what works for their audience, because everyone's audience is different, isn't it?
You find it out yourself, exactly. I'll have people ask me all the time, like, how should I start in music, or how should I start in spoken word, or any of these other things? And my advice is always, look, it's important to know that I didn't ask anyone this. I just went out and started and figured it out and learned. And that's the way for everyone to do it, because there isn't a set path or a set rules for any of these things. So yeah, exactly as you're saying, you start doing it, and the stuff that gets most traction will tend to be the stuff you stick with and do more, because it's nice if things are going down well.
Definitely.
Rather just go, no, I'm really into these obscure ones that no one wants to look at, but I'm going to do them. And that can work as well. That can be good. That's the beauty of podcasts, is yeah. you can have these kind of obscure, weird things that,
yeah.
that work.
I'll tell you one, as an obscure one that I came across recently was the Retro Football Shirt podcast.
Wow. Where
they talk about retro football shirts and Mate. Memories around it. And you know what? I think it's going to do really well. Like, I've listened to it, and when I first saw it, I was like, retro football shirt? What's going on here? Clicked on it, had a listen, and it's just an amazing listen. The chemistry between the Uche and Alex, the two presenters, is really good.
I love it.
And they managed to talk about so many elements of football, but they start off at retro football shirts. And if you're a football fan in the UK, there is a football shirt that you'll remember, and they're going to try and cover it.
I legit got a lot of my following because my first time and every subsequent time I went on Soccer AM, I wore my 89-90 Millwall kit, because it's the season that we had Sheringham and Cascarino and all these players that meant the world to me. And because I've always loved Soccer AM, but there's, you know, you'll get some people on there who are football fans and some who are there because they've got stuff to promote.
Yeah.
So me rocking up in a proper, and genuinely, it was the one I'd had from when I was a kid. So it was like, I'd had to have it extended. It was skin tight. Like, I'm bursting out of the thing. But I was like, nah, this is my top. This is my kit.
Is it still wearable now? Do you think you get a few more wears out of it?
No, you see, my mates laugh at me a bit because anytime anyone brings up exercise, I've got into exercise in the last like 2-3 years. I've got into my CrossFit. I don't bang on about it. I like all the other CrossFitters, but it is a nice thing that I now try things on from a few years back, and my thighs are too big, my shoulders are too big, and all that kind of thing. So it's that kind of, it's not like I'm trying to bulk up and be huge, but it's a nice feeling when you go, oh, I remember that shirt, I'll pop that on. You're like, huh. Well, that's not going to fit now. and not because I've got fat, which was always, you know, the guess, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's good for you to wear the clothes and the clothes not to wear you, right?
Exactly that, yeah. Exactly that.
Nice. You actually mentioned kicking off your tour. Happy 10-year anniversary a few days ago.
Yeah,
I saw
your
Instagram 10-year anniversary. Was it Dan Isaac that you were touring with?
Yeah. Or me and Dan, we had this year our 10-year anniversary of our first album.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of days ago was the 10-year anniversary of, we did our first big American tour, and we went on the Carson Daly show out there, and we did, I think it was 23 shows in 24 days. And then the Carson Daly show on the day off, and it was just this intense, mad time.
How did that happen, getting on the Carson Daly show?
They just hit us up. We were kind of, I mean, we had a manager out there at the time, so I'm guessing he instigated it in some way. But yeah, we kind of got to go on there and do our thing, and they got us to film some stuff in New York in the days, as they'd like cut to us on the streets of New York and stuff like that. It's like,
oh, wow.
It's mad.
Yeah. I mean, American TV, that kind of format's always really, really interesting. So
yeah.
I'm always intrigued as to how they kind of, is it as buzzed on Hollywood as you think, as you see it when you're watching it?
Oh, again, it's another realisation, and you'll get it from doing the podcast as well, that you suddenly realise that all these shows need people to be on them. Like, you'll be like, oh, I need to get on that show, I'd love it. It's like, they need to fill that slot. They're doing this every day of the week or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so it is one of them. Half the time, you might think that something's unachievable. And if you hit them up, and podcasters are the prime example of that half the time. Now, you'll hit a podcaster up and they'll be so pleased that someone said, I would like to come on, rather than them going, I've gone through all my contacts. I've gone through everyone I know on Twitter. If someone actually approaches them, like, yeah. Oh, wicked. Yeah. That fills a week.
Yeah, it does. Does indeed. Also, back to the Carson Daly show.
Yeah.
Like, I heard you got quite an interesting gift pack.
Yeah. Which,
like, as well. Is this a Hollywood thing as well?
We genuinely thought it was a joke, because at that point, he was the most perma-tanned and white-toothed person. And we got a little gift pack that was a few different variations of self-tanning stuff, some tooth whitening stuff. And we didn't know if it was just because we were the British guys.
Yeah.
And they were like, let's try and get them to American level. Let's sort their teeth out and their tans. But yeah. I mean, we never used either of them, but it was intriguing to, it was a weird gift pack, because it was like, I'm sure all of these things you can't put on now. Like, you've not got time to let them sink in and do their thing. So it was more of a, here, enjoy this.
here, you're like, well done for trying, but you know, it, yeah, here's a little bit of a
next time,
hand.
Yeah, if you could tighten up a bit.
That's crazy, man. Yeah, I'd say what, weird. Bit of fake tan, bit of teeth whitening with the CrossFit routine.
Mate.
Be a new man.
I'll be an Instagram legend.
Sounds like it's a wrestling name.
Yes.
Hollywood Pip.
100%.
So the fitness thing, what? So you're doing CrossFit. How many times a week do you do it?
I tend to do it like, when I've got the time, I do it 3 days on and 1 day off.
Right.
So I'll be doing it 5 or 6 times a week. And yeah, I love it. I love the variation of it. I love just being able to... my guy who programs it for me is Sam Marshall at CrossFit Chesterley Streets, so he's up in the northeast, but he'll send me my program down. I've got a little a gym at the back of my house, so it's all kettlebells and box jumps and pull-ups and stuff like that, so it's all functional fitness. It's all kind of, yeah, you're equipping yourself to be more active and more.
Yeah,
innit? I like
you have
it.
Spoken about CrossFit for the smallest amount of time out of all CrossFitters I know.
Yeah,
you seem like the most reluctant person.
You see, I'm rounding it up already. It's because of that. Because when my mate Sam got into it and he opened his gym, I was mocking him. I'm like, oh, these CrossFit kids that all bang on. And it took him ages. He said, look, just let me program you for a week. And he programmed me for a week and it was amazing. I loved it. But I was like, I'm still not going to be that guy that's on Instagram constantly saying, here's CrossFit. But I do love it. I do love it.
People are putting it in their Instagram profiles. So
yeah,
when it gets to that level, you know, CrossFit's a thing. When like, hey, I'm Marcus, hashtag CrossFit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when they start putting it in their names. That's one of the things on Instagram. That's the thing that gets me. And I noticed it a lot when, because again, I've had this big beard for like 15 years or so now. And when it started to become trendy, you'd get people on Instagram that are like, the bearded pirate, bearded Mark, bearded Johnny, the beard guy, and all stuff like that. And it's like, mate, you're going to regret that, because don't make your identity so based on one small stylistic facet of yourself.
Yeah. What happens if one day you do slip and you chip a bit of that beard off and you've got to go down to level one again, man?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You can't post.
Exactly.
Anymore.
It's the same with when kind of bright hair colours came in for girls, and you'd get a lot of girls, their Instagram would be like blue hair Michelle or pinky or bluey or all these other things. It's like, you're going to get bored of that at some point. And if you're someone who wanted bright pink hair, you're going to be someone who's going to want bright blue hair at some point, or these other things. It's like, don't pick descriptions as your thing.
Definitely not, unless it's something that you can't change, like your skin colour, me being Marcus Bronzy. There you go.
Yeah, that's allowed. That's stuck. Yeah. You can't change that.
Yeah, well, yeah, I can only get more bronze.
Exactly. You can only become more of the name.
Yeah. So do you think you'll keep the beard forever? The reason I ask this is because my grandfather had a beard from a young age, and then he just kept it all the way through.
Yeah.
He just had a beard. That was it. He didn't ever falter. He didn't ever have it really short. He was just pretty much beard like that.
It's a weird one. I'm used to it, so it's not like it's... I get annoyed at people who are obsessed over beards. Like, I will have people hit me up who are like beard dudes, and they'll be like, cool beard, man. And I'll be like, it's just hair on my face. It's not a big deal. But no, I see myself having it for a long time. But equally, because of acting, if a role came up, I'm dying to get a role that I have to get rid of it, because that's a good reason to get rid of it. Until then, I don't want to, because I'm getting roles at the moment that are all big, hairy, bearded men and stuff like that. So it's like, but I'm down for getting... I read of it for work purposes.
Okay.
But for personal purposes, yeah, it's just easier. I think I'll be sticking with it.
So it's official. If you're a casting director, Scroobius will trim the beard for you.
I am available beardless.
I am so curious. After 15 years, though,
yeah, man.
Your skin is going to be so smooth under there.
Yeah.
Are you ready to be ID'd for alcohol?
Yeah. It's going to be it's going to be an interesting one. It's going to be... I always remember... years before I stuck with a beard, I'd go from beard to clean shaven. Every time I'd shave before I settled on keeping a beard, my eyes would look huge afterwards. And I guess it's because you've got this a bit of framing on your face, right? So suddenly when that's gone, I don't know, it seems weird. I look like an owl.
It is the male version of contouring, isn't it?
It is.
When you get a little beard shape and a bit of framing of the face, I feel like I look like a potato if I don't have this little bit of fluff that I've
got. Mate, that's it. It's only in the last year or two I've gone for a bit of styling on, like a bit of shaping on my beard. Previously, it'd be full, just how it grows. And I've started to go for a bit of tidied up, and I've been pulled in.
Yeah,
been dragged into the game.
Are you oiling it? Are you putting product on it?
I used to like a beard oil. I got really into him for a bit, and it meant that people would send me tons of beard oils all the time. And then I went off them. I decided it wasn't doing as much as I thought, and I haven't used one in about 2 years. So I've got the best collection of beard oils in my bathroom, but yeah.
But none are used.
I'm not using them much at the moment.
Vintage collection of beard oils.
I kind of realised that whatever I'm putting in my hair, I can just put what's left on my hands in my beard, and that's enough. That controls it a bit.
Standard.
I don't know why I was going all out of this way to get... Well, I've got a collection of balms, and I've got some waxes, and I've got some oils, and I've got all these different things. Nah.
I've got to be honest, I have absolutely zero knowledge. Like, yeah. I always ask people, and as soon as start talking about it, after about 5 minutes, I just glaze over. I'm like,
what even is this?
Yeah, what is this wax? A couple of moustaches I've seen turned up with wax. I'd never do it personally, but that is something that definitely looks like it requires special tools.
A lot of effort,
and wax.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
I have people all the time who are like, oh, can you give me some tips on growing a beard? And it's like, there's one tip, and it's don't shave. That's literally the tip. I don't know what you're expecting me to tell you. I don't know what this secret is going to be. Just stop shaving, grow a beard. I don't know. Yeah. It's not. There's no secret here.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
So you'd shave for acting, right? And I think acting, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like out of everything that you pursue, like I said, you're a self-starter, you do it yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Acting's probably the one profession where if you are doing big TV and film stuff, you do kind of not rely on others, but you rely on other people making decisions saying, we're going to work with you. How is that for you, being in that kind of environment?
It's taken a while to get used to, and God bless my agents, because they have to put up with me emailing them all the time saying, I've heard that this is being made. Can we try and get an audition? And again, they're professionals. They're a really good company. They know what's being made. They're putting me up for anything that I should be up for. Yeah. I'll be like, I've heard a rumour that they're making a new Star Wars film. They're like, yeah, we know. We're keeping an eye out. Chill, man. But that comes from years of being kind of self-managed and doing everything myself. Obviously, I've had booking agents and stuff like that and management help on music stuff. But yeah, feeling that it all had to come from me. But on the actual performance side of it, or the film and TV side of it, it's kind of beautiful having, again, had years and years of being involved in everything from the writing to the recording to the releasing to the touring, to go and kind of do your job and then it's in someone else's hands. I've kind of enjoyed how relieving it is to go, well, it's not up to me anymore. It's someone else now in the edit and in everything else decides if this is going to be good or bad, if it's going to be light or dark, you know. So yeah, I like it. It's enjoyable.
And are you sometimes not seeing the rushes, the raw recorded video until you actually see yourself on TV?
100%. I now prefer that. When we made Taboo, I got really close with Tom Hardy, who's the lead in it, but was also one of the producers, and he'd send me kind of early edits and get my opinion and stuff like that, which for someone who was a small character in it was mind blowing. But I literally had to say to him, I was like, can we stop doing that now? Because I would have been watching that TV show anyway. It's Stephen Knight and produced by Ridley Scott and Tom Hardy and Stephen Graham. These amazing people. It's like, I want to just enjoy it when it's finished. It's like, and early on, I'd be like, yeah, I think this, tonally, this, that, blah, blah, blah. And again, I've probably got completely ignored. I'm not claiming any creative control on the huge success that was Taboo, but it was one of them. I did get to the point where I was like, I don't want to watch anymore because I want to see it in its finished capacity with all the sound and all the, everything done.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I prefer that now. It's a weird one.
So it enables you, I figure, to kind of just focus on stepping on set and just doing the best you can with your acting then, because you can kind of block out the rest of you. You don't have to think, oh, the lighting right.
Completely. And that's important because I'm brand new to it and I'm still learning. You know, I'm very aware that I didn't go to drama school or any of this. I stopped doing music. It was meant to be a year off, and now it looks like it might be a permanent. I don't know. But I stopped that to try and focus on, or to try and get into acting. And the first thing I got was a Guy Ritchie film. And so he's my first director and all this kind of thing. And then I learn off him and I get a TV series that was for FX in America, and then Taboo, which was the BBC and FX. It was just, I'm getting to learn from Guy Ritchie, from Kurt Sutter, from Tom Hardy, from all these, from Stephen Graham, from all these amazing people. So, yeah, it's great that all I have to focus on is that. So I can be learning. The reason my role has grown in both of the TV series I've done, the role has grown as the series has gone on, is because I generally, when they wrap me, I'm like, is it all right if I stick around and watch? Because rather than just go to my hotel room and get room service, I'll stay and learn. I'll watch the masters do it and kind of and learn from there. So yeah, it's literally every day is a school day in that world. I love it. Yeah,
the things that you must see in between shots and for preparing shots and stuff. Because a thing that a lot of people don't understand is that you can spend a whole day, two, just doing a really short part of a scene, maybe 100%. A few lines of dialogue each, and it requires a kind of stamina and it's a stamina to basically just have that same level of energy, whether that be big, small,
and to get that performance out, 100%.
So you must really pick up some tricks, seeing, you know, how some of the main actors really kind of get through that
and getting to talk to them. I mean, the podcast helps as well. I get to talk to great actors who, you know, I started the podcast as an entertainment thing. It's now also selfishly another classroom for me. It's like, oh, I get to talk to Paddy Considine about his process.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to learn some stuff from this. So, yeah, it's amazing to see. And, yeah, that is it. I'm still in the early stages where, you know, not as large roles and things like that, but that's important. That's an important place to learn. But getting to watch these guys who, yeah, that stamina to have to be able to give that performance. An easy example is if there's just two people in the scene, some of that shot is only going to have one of them and some is going to only have the other. You're doing them a disservice if when the camera's on them, you're just going through the motions and churning your lines off. And then when it's on you, you're giving your full performance. So you're seeing these masters who they're not even on camera and they're fully going 100% into these scenes time and time and time and time again. And that, yeah, you got to respect that.
Yeah. It's good that you picked that up, because I've been on a film set and I've seen someone just say, basically, let me describe this for the listener.
Yeah.
So the camera's on Pip, right? And then the angle that they've got means that I can't physically be facing you. So I might have to be slightly out of the way. I've seen someone just stand behind the camera and say their lines compared to somebody else saying, right, I'm going to stand as close as I can to where I would have been.
Performance.
But I'll look away so your eye lines don't accidentally go to me. You can look over the camera, you know, still pretend you're looking at me, but I'm there with you.
Yeah.
And that really does make a difference.
And that was the thing hugely in Taboo, was there was some huge names in that, but everyone was a team and a family there, and everyone was staying late for everyone's shots. It's known that a lot of big Hollywood actors, you know, it's a long day and they've got their scenes or their shots done. You'll even have the assistant director doing their lines for them. So they'll go home and there'll just be someone else doing their lines. And yeah, I love that. I love that just watching that interview was all these huge names all, you know, if we're overrunning, they're like, no, I don't care if it's only a reaction shot for a smaller character even. It's like, I'm there for you. We're getting this and making it work. And yeah, that's dope.
It's awesome, man. So you're doing a lot of roles at the moment where your role's growing throughout the production process.
Yeah.
You said it yourself, they're not like the biggest roles in all of the productions.
Yeah.
What do you want your big role to be? What would you like it to be ideally?
It's what has excited me since coming into this business, because from outside, you're like, well, like, Game of Thrones would be cool to be, and I'm a big Marvel fan. Any of the Marvel films would be cool to be and all that. But what I've realised in the last few years is half the time the most exciting roles that I've had come across my desk are stuff I had never heard of before then. You know, it's a new series, it's a new character. Well, Taboo's a prime example. The meeting, I think I've said this on a podcast before, the meeting I originally had with Nina Gold, who cast me in Taboo, I'd hustled a meeting, whether it was before I had an agent, I'd got myself in there, and she was like, right, I can see you, and she cast huge things. She was like, I can see you in Game of Thrones, that'd work. I can see you in Taboo. And at that point, I was like, I've no idea what that is. I'm focused on Game of Thrones. And she mentioned Star Wars or something like that. So in my mind, I'm like, well, I don't know what that Taboo one is. Forget it. I'm interested in those two. And then I get the script through, and it's Stephen Knight, who wrote Peaky Blinders and so many amazing things. It's produced by Ridley Scott. It's Tom Hardy. It's Stephen. All this, like, right, that was the one that if I'd known, I would have, or in the meeting, I was kind of like, I don't know what that is. Turn my nose up at it. as soon as I read it, it's like, I will do anything to be in this project. So it's kind of that. It's kind of that role that's just going to come out of nowhere and make me go, oh, wow. And also, I'm writing a few scripts. So every script I've written happens to have, you know, a 6'4" guy from Essex in, or, you know, our very accents.
Oh, coincidence.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, right, it's weird, right? But again, that's kind of an exciting and beautiful thing because it feels like I can fast track to a bigger role early because it's a role I've written. Therefore, I know that character inside and out. So I don't feel that I'm getting ahead of myself or getting in too deep. I'm kind of like, right, I know this character. So yeah, there's a few things I'm writing that I'm instantly, I'm like, I can't wait. If that gets made, I can't wait to get.
So the self-star and you're still punching out. It's still there really, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. 100%. And it's important, particularly in acting. It's important in acting because I think the reason so many actors go a bit crazy and get a bit bitter or jaded or whatever is because there's going to be big gaps in between gigs. And when I was on Taboo with Stephen Graham, I was saying to him, yeah, I've did this film and I've done a series, and this was all in my first 12 months of acting. And he kind of sat me down and was like, that's amazing, but that's not how it works. Like, that's not going to last. So prepare yourself for when there is these big gaps. And the fact is, in those gaps, I'm working on scripts, I'm recording podcasts, I'm doing my club, and I'm doing a million things, and I'm doing a lot of auditions. So at no point have I had that kind of, oh, is this really working out? Is this going to be the one? Am I going to have to get a real job or whatever? It's like, no, I can take that time and wait for the right role rather than just want any role.
So in a way, you've kind of flipped the traditional kind of acting process on its head. And you find a lot of actors will be like, right, I'll wait for the role.
Yeah.
I'll have to take the downtime by just doing, I don't know, I'll be a waiter or whatever. I'll just do something to get a wedge in and wait for that big role. But you've kind of taken it the other way around where you've already got a base standing, you've got stuff that you're committed to, and you can make it as flexible as you want. I presume, you know, you can do a few podcasts if you have a bit more time you know, have those ready so that when you're busy, you can still be productive on that front.
It's the perfect thing. And again, I wish I could say it was some kind of master plan, but it does happen that if I did want to do music again, I release on my own label now. So I'm completely in control of that. There's no one who, and the podcast, it's my network. I mean, so everything I've got, if a role comes up that I have to go dark for a few months, I go dark. I'm normally recorded a month or two ahead anyway. So I've always got that kind of, that cushion and that buffer. So yeah, it does. I've stumbled upon a good balance for it all, I guess.
Not bad. So in terms of big role, we can look forward to seeing you in one of your own productions. I'd like to see what your character's like when you've written about yourself and you're being yourself on camera.
Oh, that's it. It's writing the most messed up characters and going, I'll do that because I wouldn't want to ask anyone else to go through that. But again, I mean, on that front, I've got to have, and again, I've been doing this 3 or 4 years and that's it. And I've got to audition for three Marvel films. And for me, that's just mind blowing because the Marvel films are my thing. I'm a comic book nerd. So just getting to audition for things like that, it makes you realize what is possible. And it's like, right, if this is happening now, imagine in 5 years, imagine in 10 years.
It's kind of dope. Can you tell us what Marvel films you've auditioned for and what that process is like?
The first audition I had, so again, it's a weird one. I auditioned for this Guy Ritchie film and I got it. And that led to an audition for this series called The Bastard Executioner and I got it. And then I auditioned for Taboo and I got it. And I was like, this is easy. It was that same thing. I was like, you just go in, you read the lines and then you get it. And the first one that I got after that was audition for Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and I was like, I'm just gonna get it. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but that's just how it works. And I didn't get it, and that's fine. And that was kind of dope. So there was Guardians, there was the other one, and again, I don't know if it's just a positive outlook, but I don't get bitter over any of these. I was watching Thor Ragnarok and this character started doing his lines and I was like, that was the one. I'd had one Marvel one that they were like untitled Marvel film, like they kept it all secret, all NDA. So I didn't even know what I was auditioning for. And then I'm watching Thor Ragnarok and the dude starts doing the lines that I did in my office where I record them just on my own with a little like just some props. And I'm like, I auditioned for this. I didn't even know that. And then Deadpool 2 was the other one. And that was one that I wanted. I loved Deadpool and I wanted it so bad. But again, each time I've seen them, the people have played the character. If the character has remained in there, because that's also a common thing. I auditioned for Stranger Things Series 2 and absolutely felt I smashed it. Didn't hear anything and I was a bit heartbroken, and then I watched it and I was like, none of those are the character I auditioned for. So it's like, right. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
They just got rid of that character.
Yeah.
I can now kid myself that if they'd kept it, it would definitely have been me.
Yeah, 100%. They just weren't ready for you yet. Yeah, that's what it was.
Exactly.
Maybe in the next season, we'll see, yeah.
But that's genuinely it. Every time I go in for an audition and don't get it, it sounds like I'm just Mr. Positive Attitude, but I genuinely think, like, for example, Guardians 2. Or let's leave Guardians, actually, because James Gunn being kicked out is a disgrace to me, so I don't like the idea of Guardians 3. But Deadpool 2, not getting that, it then makes me think, well, if they make a Deadpool 3, imagine how much better I will be as an actor because of the different roles I've had, the different auditions I've had. So if I can get an audition for that one, I'll be even better. I will have improved. I'll be the person that they need then. And
yeah.
That's kind of, I love that.
Oh, I reckon that would be a definite career highlight to be in a Marvel film.
It'd be mad, wouldn't it?
What they have done with that whole franchise is just amazing, man.
I love it.
What, like 15 years of films we've had.
Yeah.
That have managed to hook us in again and again. It's really hard to do that.
And people aren't appreciative enough, I don't think, of what that is. Because that's never happened in anything. The closest thing is James Bond. And the Bond films are kind of loosely attached, and they kind of reboot every time there's a new one anyway. So 15 years of films that do all interlink and have these crossover bits, and the stories are continuing and reactive. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. And I think they've got better over the years as well. So we've kind of gone from the original Wolverine that we saw in X-Men to Logan.
To Logan, yeah, completely. And again, the beauty is as well is they don't all have to be amazing.
Mm.
It's one of the things that I think Star Wars fans are going to have to get used to. Now Star Wars is owned by Disney and they're looking to release a film every year or whatever.
Yeah.
Is, or two films a year or whatever it turns out being, is you were used to waiting 10 years, 20 years for a new few and then waiting again. Whereas now you're going to get them regularly. And with the Marvel films, I go and see all of them. There's some that I enjoy more than others, but it doesn't cause the uproar that a Star Wars film that people don't like causes. Yeah. There's one that people don't like and they're like, it needs to be removed from the canon.
Yeah, yeah.
It shouldn't be part of the story anymore. It's unacceptable. It's like, you didn't enjoy it. It's cool.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll like the next one. Chill out.
A friend of mine said that the Marvel franchise and their movies are kind of like the greatest ever Netflix series.
Yeah, man. 100%.
Because on that note, you know, if you're watching something like a season like Stranger Things, you might be like, oh, that episode wasn't as good, but I'll stick with it and stay. And I think that's the kind of mentality we've got. You know, when someone recommends a series to you, said you might not like the first couple of episodes, or this episode might be a bit
ropey. I'll stick with it. I'll keep watching.
Stay with it, and you'll be like, all right, I'll try it. And then at the end of it, you go, flipping hell, that was good.
It's the beauty of Black Mirror. I think it's the most genius show ever, because if there's episodes you don't like, you just talk about the ones you did like. And any other series, you'll go, oh, it's a bit crap in the middle. Oh, it's a bit dead. On Black Mirror, if you don't like one, you're just like, oh, I'll watch the next one. You're like, oh, did you see Black Museum? And things like that. Yeah. It's like, you just focus on the amazing ones. It's such a genius series idea, because they can get away with ones that aren't to everyone's taste.
Yeah, phenomenal. Because I really didn't enjoy the first episode in the first season. Yep. It was just a bit much for me.
I watched the first season and everyone was going crazy over it. And my analysis, I realised, was I felt they were all stories that I would get just as much from if you just told me in a sentence in a pub.
Yeah.
But like, it's all right. The Prime Minister, right? He has to fuck a pig. Well, this is, I don't need to watch an hour of it. It's just this crazy concept.
Yeah.
And then that just went out the window. They just became these amazing, complex works of art, rather than just, I've had this crazy idea.
Yeah.
Here's an episode.
It just so happens to be quite relevant in the near future, which is crazy. Yeah. And it's also funny over the years how many of the ideas in Black Mirror have actually come to light. Do you know what I mean?
So yeah, completely.
There's an episode about social media where you get valued in life,
yeah,
depending on how well you're doing on social media. And then there's talks of, you know, China kind of adopting a sort of point system moving forward, yeah, where your social standing and whether you've got a job and what you do kind of gives you extra points. And like I said, the first episode from the first season, I watched it, I was like, this isn't me. This is a bit graphic for me. And just the idea of what he had to do, I was too squeamish. And then as you go through it, I was just like, there's so many things in these stories echo what's actually happening in society now, what's about to happen. Even the episode where there's a gentleman that passes away and they invent technology for you to be able to connect with them using all their social media. Some people put enough out there on the social media where...
Completely.
I think if I genuinely looked at all of your Twitter feed, all of your Instagram feed, everything that you've put out, I could write tweets like you and I would know for a good few days.
100%. I definitely agree. It's mad. And again, it's that's what I think a Black Mirror is great at. And it takes it all surreal enough that they don't necessarily have to make some big point. Yeah. It doesn't have to be, think about this. It can just be like, this is mental.
Yeah.
Enjoy. You know, try sleeping at night now.
Yeah. It's like, what if this happened? Yeah. And it kind of could.
Yeah.
It's
very possible.
Thanks, Charlie. Another sleepless night.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Obviously this show is called How to Kill an Hour. We like to spend ways killing time. Like we said at the start of the episode, we played a computer game
before we
press record on the podcast. That game was Life is Strange 2.
Yeah.
And I asked you to play it.
Yeah.
You have had no knowledge of the Life is Strange franchise.
No, as far as I'm aware.
So this is great because you can kind of let me know what you think about the game and what it was like for you. I mean, do you want to describe how we got into it?
Again, I really enjoyed it. And the way I described it, like when we were playing it, was it felt like a really advanced choose your own adventure book. So you're literally watching a film or a scene play out. And then every now and then it will go, do you want to do this or do that? Or do you want a reply with this or that? And that feels kind of, I mean, describing that sounds awful, but it's not, honestly. It's more engaging even at that level. But then it's nice and slow paced, and then all of a sudden you've got to make some quicker decisions and some more important decisions. And the point that we stopped, it was clear that the game's going to get really intense and crazy, but it lulls you into that, do you want to pick up the cookies or the chips? And it's like, all right, well, I'll do that. But yeah. I liked it. It's good fun.
So it's like this third person graphic adventure. Yeah. Like you said, it's like the books where you'd basically, you know, do I open the door and go down the creepy stairs or do I go up the creepy stairs?
If you want to go down the stairs, turn to page 12. If you want to go up the stairs, turn to page 10.
Yeah. And and the premise behind Life is Strange is it's kind of a coming of age teenage story, a movie, imagine, where you can make decisions. And as the game moves forward, there are, without spoiling it, supernatural elements that come into play, which you got a little taste of. We also did a video for this, which we'll put a link to in the show description so you can have a look at it. And the thing that was really cool that you touched on was every decision that you make makes a difference.
Yeah.
But they really kind of lull you into feeling that some of the decisions that you make waves that aren't that big.
Yeah.
For example, do you give your brother the chocolate bar or your father the chocolate bar? Or do you tell the truth to your dad about what you're going to do tonight or not? Pip chose a very interesting set of answers, should we say? And as you go further through the game, you kind of see the small ripples that your character makes from decisions kind of turn into really, really large consequences of actions. And you did pick a choice at the end of the little gaming session that we had that meant things really kicked off.
It really kicked off intensely. And I loved it. I thought it was really interesting. I love that it feels like gaming is an area that more and more just really well-written stories are being told now. I mean, people will talk a lot about how cinema is rehashing all the same stories over and over again. Dan Lesac, who I made a lot of my music with over the years, he does a lot of soundtrack stuff in gaming now.
Oh, yeah.
And he works with a guy, I think his name is Mike Bethel, I think his name is, and he's someone, Dan was saying to me, this is a dude, he's making games that have just got these amazing stories, and it's this kind of thing. There's these intricately written, essentially films, but you play them and you engage them and you change them, and I love that.
And it's really important that you, with games like this, and that you listen to other characters. So you were really good at that, like reading body language and picking up little nuances and small bits of conversation. I think somebody said, oh yeah, bring a few beers to the party, and then you were, maybe you like beers, but as soon as the character, you control the character, you were like, right, beers, where are the beers? Let's get the beers.
The first thing we need to do, let's go and get them beers sorted.
Definitely relate to that. But I'll be honest with you though, the listener, that if you're into a Tekken, a platform game, a real hard hitting game, like, you know, we're big fans of Spider-Man here, at How to Kill an Hour, right, this might not be for you, right? Let's be honest. But if you're cool with sitting down and really letting something watch you as well as you watching it, I feel like Life is Strange,
because that's it. I was thinking as I was playing it and afterwards that I was like, well, this seems like I'll really enjoy it, but how much replayability appeal has it got? But then in reality, you at least one more time I'd want to know what making a few different decisions would do and how different the story would be. So I think there is that replay. Because of the pacing of it, as I said, and because it's telling such a personal story, initially I was like, well, you'll play it once, but you're not going to watch that film again. Yeah. But I think I'd at least want to have a bit of a look and go, how about if I play it as a naughty kid? Or how about I play it as a good kid? Like, if you decide at the start, and that's something I'd advise anyone who's playing it, kind of, this sounds really weird, but decide on your character early.
Yeah.
And kind of say, right, I'm going to stick to this, and I'm going to be honest, or I'm going to be
an absolute the
naughty
turd.
Little and be the bad kid and go that route. And I'd imagine that'll give your character more of a path, I guess.
Yeah. You know? And they even tie in your decisions that you make if you play the first game with the second game. So there's a point where you can say, this is the decision I made in Life is Strange, and it affects the kind of beginnings of the game as well. We almost got to that bit, but it's pretty interesting. It's nice. It's just, I feel like it's its own thing. So I'm going to put it in that category of game where I feel like it's an interactive movie. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely sort of the Telltale kind of feeling.
Yeah.
But something that you're not killing time with at the moment, and I'm not, but I feel like you can help me with, is, there was a post the other day, a buzz on social media, I think you put it on your Instagram as well, about a show called The Boys.
Yeah.
Now, it's going to be coming out in 2019, starring Carl Urban, Jennifer Esposito, and Jack Quaid.
Yeah.
And all I know is there was a big hype about it, and I went online, and it was also a comic.
Yeah.
That's all I know. Loads of hype about it. I think I want to get involved in it.
Mate,
you were very excited about it.
I'm very excited. It's my favourite a comic book series of all time.
Really?
It's really good. Yeah, damn. It's by Garth Ennis, who wrote Preacher, and I've really enjoyed the Preacher adaptation on Amazon, and Seth Rogen and his partner, I can't remember his partner's name now. I feel really bad.
Get a few if you want.
It's going to annoy me now.
Lauren Miller?
No. His writing partner.
Okay.
Sorry, Evan Goldberg.
Oh, that's it.
There we go. I got it in the end. Yeah. So they were fans of Preacher, and they bought that and adapted it for TV, and they're the ones who bought The Boys as well and adapted it.
Right.
And The Boys is a superhero comedy. I mean, I don't know if they'll be able to go as dark and graphic and horrendous as they do in the comic book on a TV show.
Cause how dark does it get?
It gets really messed up. The basic premise is it's a world where superheroes exist, but it's more realistic. Because in reality, if superheroes exist, I mean, we've seen how the most powerful people in the world that we live in act.
Right.
So if superheroes existed, they'd be these heroes, but they'd be up to loads of dark shit behind closed doors, really messed up stuff. And the boys are kind of put together by the CIA or whomever, and they've got kind of some kind of injectable superhero abilities, but they're the guys who keep an eye. They're basically the police of the superheroes. And yeah, it's just absolutely amazing. I loved it.
So when you say, because The Preacher, I know that to be quite violent.
Yeah. Right?
And you're saying this,
I'd say our Boys
preacher's
is,
The Preacher.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. So it depends how far they can go with it. But it's incredibly excited, and a sign of how excited I am for it is, I did a tweet this morning actually saying how I gave up music to take up the hobby of telling people of different shows I auditioned for, but The Boys is something I auditioned for.
Okay, cool.
And you can imagine my excitement. It's like, this is my favourite comic ever. And I got to audition for the role that went to Carl Urban, which incidentally, he got the role in Thor Ragnarok I auditioned for as well. So,
right.
But for me, I love him. I think he was amazing in Dread. I'm a fan of him. So it's like, the fact I'm even getting considered in roles he's up for is madness. But so I auditioned for this, and I almost turned it down initially as an audition, because I was like, I love this book so much, I'm not sure if I'm right for it. But then I was like, right, no, I know this character. And I auditioned, I didn't get it. And then they asked me to audition for one of the other characters in it. And at that point, I said no. Because again, it was one of them. I respect the book too much. I love that character too much. And I felt I could do a decent job, but I'm not that character. I'm not that guy. Therefore, I felt, yeah, I wrote myself out of... Again, I'm not saying I would have got it, but the fact that they said, oh, can you audition for this one, this guy as well? I was like, nah, actually. I thought about it. I started doing a tape. I got sent the sides and everything. I kind of started learning them. And I was going over it, and I was like, nah, it's not you. It's not me. So yeah, I'm just incredibly excited about it. And
I'm really expecting big things then.
It's like, real good. It's dark and nasty. Yeah, incredibly violent. The stuff that the superheroes in the book, the stuff that they get up to behind closed doors, goes as dark as you can imagine.
Wow. So let's think of a few dark superhero films. So The Watchmen has got graphic in areas, but comparing that to kind of what you've explained, I feel like that's going to be
nowhere near. Yeah, it's that kind of. And again, The Watchmen. The beauty of The Watchmen is it's a darkness that, I don't know. It kind of feels. No, I guess the comedian storyline and all that in the Watchmen is very dark. Yeah, it's that then taken further. I guess as everyone involved is just the nasty. Yeah.
I'm really excited for that.
I can't wait.
So are you reading other comics at the moment then? Like what are you getting stuck into when you get a bit of time?
I'm not reading an awful lot at the moment. I just read, there was a new Thanos story, and it was called something like, it's called Thanos Wins, I think. And it's all about Thanos. That was really good. I really enjoyed that. But, The Wicked and the Divine is one that I've liked for a long time, and that's coming to an end now. See, I'm enjoying that. I've not had as much comic time as I like recently. That is definitely something that it's like previously that was a big. That is how I'd kill an hour comfortably. Just like I'll get some comics and be good to go. And I've not been as up to date on that as I'd like to be.
Fair enough. How's the collection looking? Is it looking quite big?
It's good. It's hefty. I keep them in two separate areas. I've got my independent comic collection on one side of the room and my Marvel and DC on the other side. So I'm kind of I'm strict with this stuff. I've got my, okay. I go deep on this.
Organisation. I'd love to get you in a room with Otis Dealey from The Gadget Show.
Right, yeah,
he's got
yeah.
like a 10,000 comic book collection.
Oh,
is that,
really?
Is that right? Bill, about 10,000, he says, yeah.
Oh, wow.
10,000, yeah,
yeah,
so
that's
I'd love
next
to just
level.
Leave. I'd love to just put you both in a corner of a room with like a drink in each hand and just
yeah,
let you talk
for a while. Yeah, that sounds amazing. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask him a question that I asked him.
Yeah.
And we'll put the link to his episode in the show description so you can
Perfect.
Check this out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So God forbid this ever happens. There's a fire
yep.
in your house. You've got to get out.
Yep.
You can take one comic with you.
Yep.
What would that be?
It's easy. I've got a Watchmen issue one signed by Alan Moore that says to my friend Scroobe, Alan Moore, because I've done some stuff with Alan in the past, and I've been a Watchmen fan for years. That was the one that kind of broke open the grown up comic book world for me. And at that point, it kind of he fell out with everyone involved in the Watchmen. He wasn't involved in the film. He doesn't like any of that. So in general, it's not one that he signs. But because he'd kind of become a pal, he was like, yeah, just send it over and I'll sign it. So,
shit.
Yeah.
Has that got a special standing in your, is that?
Yeah,
that,
I've got it
that's
framed.
That's not just in one of the, yeah, I was going to say, that's not in the box. That's out and
I've got two framed. I've got that framed and I've got a Venom, a Lethal Protector issue one, because Venom was my favourite growing up. So
yeah. Visually,
I'm excited to go and see that later this week.
I'm hoping it does well. I'm not sure. I mean, I love Tom.
I'm excited.
But he's such, Venom is such, and Venom and Carnage are visually some of the most popular
mate,
characters.
Imagine how scared I was. So my mate Kelly has written a lot of the Venom film. Tom's in it, who's a mate, and Riz is in it, who's a mate. Yeah, it's my favourite and I'm the most precious over it. So I'm like, I'm really nervous about it. And also, all my mates are in it. Like, yeah. My mate Jacob is the stuntman in it. So it's like, literally, there's so many people I love. It's what gives me some confidence on it, though, because they're all people I love and I've met them because of respect of their work, if you know what I mean. So they're all people that I know are masters of what they do. So if it's possible to make a good Venom film, these are the guys who will have made it. Yeah. So,
I mean, I don't want to get into all the politics of how, you know, it's a fractured part of the universe.
Yeah.
But I just hope that they can do enough to tie it in.
Yeah, I hope
you
so.
You know, like when you watch sort of the Marvel stuff on Netflix, they mention other characters, maybe not by name, but
Completely.
They do what they can to kind of sew it in. I just hope that there's enough in there, because I really feel Venom and Carnage are such an important part of that universe.
Yeah,
that I don't want to feel like I'm stepping away from
and you know
the
what?
Rest of it.
I was talking to some mates about that, and they were like, I wonder if they'll be allowed to do this or allowed to do that. And then last night, I was rewatching Infinity Wars, and it's like, Spider-Man's like one of the main people in it. So originally, in Civil Wars, it was like, oh, they're lending them Spider-Man for one little bit. It seems to be open season for crossover and going back and forth now. So hopefully, you'll be able to...
Yeah, for the fans.
Completely.
For the fans, man.
Yeah.
So before I let you get out of here, Pip, thanks for coming here today, by the way.
No problem at all. It's been a pleasure.
What have we got like forthcoming from you? What do you want us to look out for? Because you are acting, pods, stuff. What do you want to let us know about? What can you let us know about?
Well, that's what's exciting. At the moment, I've not got any... I'm confirmed on season two of Taboo. I've no idea when we're filming it. So it's one of them. It's exciting that at the moment, the things that I've got that I can hold in my hands is scripts I'm working on. So there's a series I've got in development with Warp, who did This Is England and Four Lions and tons of just all the Shane Meadows film. Like, I'm a massive fan of them. So there's a series I'm developing with them. I've got another one that I'm finishing off the first draft of the script at the moment that I'll be sending off to my writing agent. And yeah, just all of that. And podcasts, obviously there's constant podcasts at the moment, so yeah, they're every week. I've not missed a week in 4 years. In fact, the anniversary is in a few days. I think it's next week is the 4 year anniversary.
Oh, happy birthday in advance for that,
it's
man!
Exciting, right?
Yeah, that's awesome, man. You're gonna do a birthday episode then?
I've just got too many great guests already lined up. So I've got Desiree Akvan, who I mentioned earlier, who's one of the best conversations I've ever had. Just inspirational woman and amazing writer. So yeah, I thought about, oh, I should do a special thing. I was like, no, they're all special to me. That's the point of the podcast.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. And I'll put this to you. What do you think's the future of podcasting holds then? Especially because of the fact that there's so much technology that we now can, you know, we can make broadcast quality content.
Yeah.
With our own kit, and it's really affordable now. Yeah. It's realistic for you to put it together.
I think it's endless. Podcasting is the end goal for me. A lot of people assume it's a stopgap, a means to an end, but I've been approached in the last year by the BBC and by Global to come and do stuff with them, and it hasn't appealed because podcasting is free. I've got, and I mean that in both ways. It's free to the listener, but also the freedom. I don't answer to anyone. I can do what I want there, and I couldn't go back now to working for a BBC or a Global or whomever else, because you'd have restrictions on you. They'd have someone saying, well, can we just maybe go in this direction, yeah, and can we put this person on? It's like, yeah, no, we do what we want, and that's the beauty of it. My hope is that it grows and grows and grows and grows.
Awesome, man. And I look forward to it growing and growing, man, and I'll keep consuming it. Is there a podcast that you'd like to share from your network, or one that's not, like, for example, I'm going to plug this again, I'm not getting paid for this, the Marvel Wolverine.
Yeah.
It's like 4 or 5 episodes in right now. Fucking awesome. Really good.
Give that a look. There is one that's on my network, but again, it's on my network because I'm a fan of the guy who was starting it, and I said, do you want me to put it out for you? It's Films to Be Buried with Brett Goldstein. And Brett Goldstein's a comedian and an actor. He did a film called Super Bob, which is one of my favourite comedy and superhero films ever. It's a British thing that came out a few years back. And he just has a guest every week. And it's kind of like a Desert Island Discs, but with films. And he's just got really good questions for each of his slots. And yeah, I love it.
All right, check that out then.
Yeah, it's worth a look.
Worth a subscribe.
Damn right.
Billy's waving at me. Is there something I'm missing out? Bill, what do you need from me, mate?
What do we say to all of our guests?
Oh, yeah, Scroob. Oh, yeah, all right. I thought Billy wouldn't. So we've got this ongoing poll. There's nothing to even seg into this. Sorry about this, Piff. I'm just going to hit you with
it. Hit me with it. I'm back in. Yeah, yeah, I'm good.
Back in the game. So I'm going to throw a scenario at you. It's really, like, this. People don't realise that the other type of person exists until I ask this question. So I'm going to put a scenario to you. You're taking a shit, right?
Yeah.
Number two, really good, obviously. You've just said that, taking a shit.
Yep.
And you're about to wipe your ass.
Mm-hmm.
Do you stay seated or do you stand up?
Yo, this is going to blow your mind, but I do a drunk cast every now and then, the podcast. Yes. And we had one recently which we couldn't release because it got too offensive. Genuinely, the high point of that podcast was this discussion, was that exact question, because all four of us had slightly different situations. So, but again, you know, we've talked about a lot of stuff. If that's, you know, the drunk cast is like 4 or 5 hours. If this question is the absolute peak of class in it, you can see why we didn't end up releasing that. You know, it's not going to be. It was the best question, and I'm a stay seated. I go up on one leg. I'm doing it visually.
You cock it out. If you're watching the video, you're cocking out.
I'm right? A lift and wipe.
And lift and wipe.
And that's it. Again, bizarrely, we were talking about this at my club night at the weekend. Because it came
during
up.
During the club night. That's great.
Because
night
it came
talk,
up
yeah.
because of the drunk cast.
Yeah.
I released. And one of my mates, he's a cocket and then a stand up for the last wipe. And again, my mate Stu is a stand up for the lot. Chris is a stand up for the lot. And yeah, I'm a cock.
It's a sit, really. If we're going to be really firm,
it's a sit. Yeah. It's 100% a sit. Yeah.
All right. So we need to do the maths. I think
it does. It blows it because that was it. It blows people's minds. I even went. The reason it came up, and I'm not meaning to take this up to the next level. And
crack
you have to
on,
ask
mate.
Everyone. But
crack on.
I also brought up you're in the toilets and you're going for a wee. What's your process? Because I'm not an out the zip. Again, one of the guys wasn't out the zip. I'm a pull down,
yeah.
Like not pull down like a kid around my ankles.
I've got a mate that does that.
Yeah, standard.
He's been on this show a few episodes ago.
I bet he plays rugby, right? It's generally rugby or sports boys that tend to go down for the some kind of. But yeah, I'm a down and then. I'm getting graphic now, but yeah, I'm gonna take everything out.
Yeah,
and then
if I'm wearing tracksuit bottoms, then you just go down. It depends.
Pull down and go, but yeah,
if I've got a suit on, then it's easier to unzip
and
get
it.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, it is mind blowing. You've nailed it exactly right. Is that people aren't aware that the other type exists until they hear the conversation.
I think
I thought everyone did this. I thought everyone did it this way.
And we're trying to work out where. It's learnt from, and Ramel London, she's a broadcaster. She came on the show and she alluded to it being when she was young, she'd always be stood up
right.
to wipe her bottom, and that's where it came from.
I see, that
and
makes
then,
sense.
There's another CJ Beats, he's producer, one half of Wide Awake, he's come on the show, and he his process is very interesting. It revolves standing up and rotating around so that he's facing the toilet as he's wiping. And the reason that this is
very weird,
the reason that this has come to light, we should just put a link in for the episode because it gets a bit hectic, but somebody has seen it happen. But the whole story behind that can be explained.
Damn.
I'm looking at your face now.
Yeah, Scrooge, that's a hell of a technique, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And also walking in on somebody doing that as well.
Yeah, that'd be confusing.
Actually, there's another question. Right. So you walk into the bathroom.
Yeah.
And sorry about this. Please feel free to press forward 15 seconds or 30. Walk into the toilet. There's a little skiddy at the back of it.
Yeah.
Do you wee it off when you're having a wee or not?
Yeah, so always target practice. You've got to clean that thing.
I mean, I do it, but some people are like, that's disgusting. I'm like, nah. Just tidy it up, mate.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah, it's saving someone a job.
And the sense of achievement when you clean that off, you're like, fucking hell.
Yeah,
good job. I got a good stream.
I did it. Yeah,
yeah. I got a good stream.
I've got a healthy flow.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. So, Pip, how can we find out all about what you're doing? Social media.
So yeah, on socials, I'm at ScroobiusPipYo on Twitter and Instagram, and then just ScroobiusPip on Facebook. Yeah,
cool.
Always on there.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show and killing some time with us. It's been much appreciated.
It's
man.
Been a pleasure.
Cool. Before you go anywhere, don't forget you can go to howtokillanhour.com/news and join our newsletter where we'll be letting you know about competitions, giveaways, where all of our merch is as well. And also the How to Kill an Hour website looks really pretty as well. Check it out, we've got some great content on there, videos like myself and Pip playing Life is Strange 2, and also if you're into electric skateboarding, there's something up on the homepage that you'll like to. In the meantime, thank you for killing some time with us. I've been Marcus Bronzy.
Yep, I've been Scroobius Pip.
Stay blessed.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.